The test of a man is how much he will bear for a cause which he knows to be right. How long will he stand in the depths of despair? How much will he suffer and fight? There are many to serve when the victory is near, and few are the hurts to be borne. But it calls for a leader of courage to cheer the men in a battle forlorn. It is the way you hold out against odds that are great that proves what your courage is worth. It is the way that you stand to the bruises of fate that shows up your stature and girth. And victory is nothing but proof of your skill, veneered with a glory that's thin. Unless it is a proof of unfaltering will, and unless you have suffered to win.
The Badlands. Explain those Badlands. That's a hell of a name.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Set the plate, set the tone. flights of grace and future falls, present pain, all fools say, oh my God. No cure for our disease. Turn a phrase and rise again, or fake your death and only tell your closest friend. Oh my God. My soul upon your grief, weddings, boats, and alibis all drift away in a mother cries. Liars and fools, sons and failures, thieves will always say, lost and found, ailing wanderers, healers always say, whores and angels, men with problems, believers always say, broken hearted, separated, orphans always say, war creators, racial haters, preachers always say, distant fathers, fallen warriors, givers always say, pilgrim saints, lonely widows, users always say, fearful mothers, watchful doubters, saviors always say. Sometimes I cannot forgive, these days mercy cuts so deep. If the world was how it should be, maybe I could get some sleep. While I lay I dream we're better, scales look on and faces lighter. When we wake we hate our brother, we still move to hurt each other. Sometimes I can close my eyes, and all the fear that keeps me silent falls below my heavy breathing. What makes me so badly bent? We all have a chance to murder. We all feel the need to wonder. We still want to be reminded that the pain is worth the thunder. Sometimes when I lose my grip, I wonder what to make of heaven. All the times I thought to reach up, all the times I had to give up. Babies underneath their beds, hospitals that cannot treat them.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Culture of Change. It's great to see you all tonight. Do us a favor and please hit that thumbs up button wherever you're watching. If you're watching us on X or on Rumble or over on
Pilled.
My brain. The word thank you. My brain just completely blanked.
It's okay. Happy Mother's Day, Ash.
Thank you. My Mother's Day gift. So Brian is going to be super jealous because this is what I did to the one side. But this is the cup.
Oh, yeah. No, he's going to be totally jealous. That thing has its own undertow. You're literally struggling to move that thing across the table with one hand.
My middle son works at Taco Bell and he goes, Mom, and he cleaned the kitchen too. And he goes, Mom, I'm giving you this cup for Mother's Day because it's a Stanley Cup and Stanley Cups are for girls. Thanks, honey. Also, he lost the straw, so I made do with a different straw. That's how it goes in the frat house. But thank you. I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm somewhere in between. Today's always a little bit of a rough day for me, but yeah. I'm all right. I'm good. I'm glad to
be
here.
And then, of course, I'm like, hey, I want you to talk about your mom tonight.
It's fine.
Hey, Paul, I want to make you really uncomfortable. No, I think it's important. And, you know, celebrating the women who made us who we are, right? Yeah. Our moms. And I know, you know, Barbara also lost her mom and she's in the chat and probably in the room with you. But I just want to honor it. I want to honor you and your mom and Barbara's mom and my mom and all the moms still with us or otherwise who painted a vision of a world, at least in my case, to strive for. A world that, you know, to in my case, my mother was a very tough woman and I was not allowed to be a weak one. I was not allowed to be overly emotional. I was super, super emotional as a child. I know that's like you guys can't believe it. I know. you know, it wasn't allowed. Like my parents tried to prepare me, I think, for the world that they thought was coming. I don't think anyone saw this world coming, but I'm super grateful that I was made, you know, to be able to recognize when I'm being emotional and to try and control it and, you know, to be intentional when I don't. My mom is, she's amazing. And we've almost lost her a few times and she's still with us. And because of some of the experiences, she's immune compromised, doesn't have a spleen her whole life. So she's had all sorts of where she doesn't get like normal illnesses. She gets like really weird, you know, illnesses that people don't get. Pneumococcal septicemia. She's had it like 4 times and it's supposed to kill you, but she's still here. And I'm so, so blessed and grateful for that. And for the, you know, Matt's mom is still here. We lost Matt's dad a few years back, but grateful for that and want to honor them and also honor the memory of your mom and Barbara's mom and the others.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's such a, it's always been one of my favorite days and it's, I have no framework of how I'm going to discuss any of this. So I'm just going to go, but like a couple, like last week and even last night, me and Barbara had to go to this store. Cause every now and again, despite how much I hate Walmart, you've got to go for some essential things. Right. So we went and it's just been every year since we passed, every time we go to the store around this year and I see the Mother's Day section, it always makes my heart a little heavy because it always used to be a big thing for me. Like I am not afraid to admit that I was a complete and total mama's boy. Like me and my mom were like this. And so every Mother's Day, it was especially since I got with Barbara, it was going out and finding things for our mothers that would make them smile. Maybe not big, expensive, huge things, but things that touch their soul and would make them smile. And for me and my mom, from the time I started cooking well until the time she passed, every Mother's Day was, hey, Mom, what do you want for dinner this year? And I would go out and buy the stuff and make her a scratch made meal and we'd sit there and eat it. And it's just going to the store and seeing it just kind of, it's bittersweet because I know she's home with Jesus now, which would make her happier than anything. But at the same time, it's the whole human thing and not having that person here anymore to enjoy this day with. But at the same time, I certainly take pleasure and live vicariously through seeing my friends who have great relationships with their mothers, being able to share and spread that love and spend time together. And I put up a post today that said, you know, hug your mother and tell her you love her, because not everybody has that opportunity. And one day you're going to look back and be like, damn, I wish I would have given one more hug or said I love you one more time. So, you know, and I had somebody snarky reply to me on Twitter and say, it would be a lot easier if she wasn't 2,000 miles away. And excuse my language, but my reply to him was, well, pick up the fucking phone and tell her you love her. Be thankful you have a mother. It's pretty simple. It's easy to get lost in the busyness and hastiness of today's world and let phone calls slide, but not with your mother or father. Make sure you always take the time, because one day they're not going to be there and you're going to wish you did.
Yeah, take it for granted. That was one thing after we lost Matt's dad that, you know, there's just so many times that that's the only person that could understand the thing you want to say or the emotion you want to, you know, convey, the conversation you want to have, and they're not there anymore. Taking that for granted while they're still here is something to be mindful of. So we're talking tonight about lies that are told to children. And we have some fun stuff and some horrifying stuff and some more serious stuff. But when you think about like your mom and when you're so little abs, right? little boy abs running around. What were the biggest lessons, the things, you know, top three kind of she helped build, instill in you, core part of what you are? What are those things?
The very first and top one at the head of the ladder is my faith. My mother was my rock for my faith, and my dad is exceptionally strong in his faith as well. So it was arguably the combination of the two, but my mom was always there with faith in Jesus Christ and God is the backbone for you, the thing you need in your life. There were plenty of times in my life that I was kind of given up and especially mad at God. And she was the one that would say, look, I understand, but here's the real deal and you need to listen to me. And the second thing she taught me was to stand your ground and to not let people walk all over you, to not let people skate off your back, and to not let people use you. Essentially, that was people in the movement know me as kind of an emotional spitfire. If somebody wrongs me, I have a really hard time keeping my mouth shut about it. And I got that from her. You know, I think I told the story. I can't remember. It wasn't on a show. I was chatting with somebody in a chat group, but the story of how I started homeschooling, and that was in eighth grade. I was getting bullied really badly. And a kid crossed the line one day and I beat the shit out of him. I mean, absolutely on top of him, full blown Ralphie from Christmas Story, just beating the brakes off this kid. And this is still the only time I ever heard my mother drop an F-bomb, like in my presence, her entire life. And we're sitting there in the parent teacher meeting and the principal legit looks at my parents and says, well, we saw Paul getting bullied. We just didn't know how much more he was going to take. I was the one that got suspended. And my mom stood up and looked at the principal and said, fuck you, fuck this school. And we got up and walked out and I started homeschooling. So I got that from mom. And the third thing I learned from mom was to always give respect when it's earned and don't give respect when it's not earned. You don't have to respect people that haven't earned it. And above all else, you need to show love and kindness to the world. I know it's more than three. It's kind of like 20 wrapped into three, but those are kind of some of the bigger life lessons she taught me about, you know, how to carry yourself as an adult, as a human being, you know. And I was like you when I was young. I was super emotional. I'd, you know, even up until recently, I had a tendency to be a hothead over certain things. And I've grown a fair bit past that a lot because of her teachings and wisdom. Even with her gone over 3 years now, I still feel her there with me when I'm about to pop or lose it. You know, this past couple days was kind of one of those things for me where it's like, you know, one little small bad thing happens, but then 20 things lump on top of it. And the opportunity is presented for you to spiral down and just reside in anger and negativity for the day. And I was presented with that opportunity yesterday. I just didn't buy in, and I could feel her there. I could feel her kind of saying, no, you got this, man. You don't have to get so twisted over those things anymore. It's cool. And I could literally feel her hand patting my back. You know, it's just awesome. I don't know who believes in that stuff. I certainly do.
Yeah. My mom's, you know, my dad and my brother and I, there's things that we joke about, right? Like somebody's child. She would always say whenever we were ragey or pissed off or, you know, ranting on the television or somebody in our lives, now that's somebody's child. And it turned into a, you know, a joke in the family, but that is like imprinted in me, you know, and I do try to, and it's been a long, hard road, and it's real hard to try and walk in the shoes of communists, right? And see where they're coming from. But usually when you're, you know, when somebody responds to you in a way that doesn't seem appropriate and they're from a very heightened emotional place, maybe it's angry, maybe it's accusatory, there's more often than not something else going on. And I don't think I would have learned that without my mom.
Yeah.
It was so annoying how I learned it, right? Because she would never take my side in anything, like ever. It was always like, you have to see this from the other person's perspective, to the point where I wouldn't really want to tell her, right? I'd go talk to my dad. He'll like, you know, we'll make jokes back and forth about the other person to make ourselves less ragey. But my mother was always trying to make me other focused. And what made me think about that was you talking about your mom and, you know, kind of just like the justice aspect of it and the kindness and love and the faith aspect of it, because we are meant to be salt and light in the world. We're meant to be an example and to make people want what we have because of the way that we handle things, especially adversity and all of those kinds of things. I really do credit my mother and it's not insignificant how annoying this lesson was, you know, having my mother always be focused on the other person. I really credit her for that, though, because I'm able to deal, like, there's been so many times, I would say, in the past few years where someone that I'm close to or in working relationship with or friends with otherwise has responded in a inflammatory, angry way. And my fleshly, you know, regular response would be to snap back and do better. Right. But then there's that, you know, that element of like, well, hang on a second. Why are they acting that way? What's going on here? There's something else going on. And at the end of it, you know, turning that conflict, that confrontation into, they just, you know, really needed somebody to talk to, needed a shoulder, needed a hug, or just to get it out, right? To get it off their chest and be heard. And I don't know that I would, you know, be able to.
Oh, it's so crazy. You, when I was in the second grade, I had a teacher, and I don't remember all of my elementary school teachers' names at this point, but I remember this one. Her name was Mrs. Hamright, and she was an older Black lady, very old school, older Black lady, very strict, borderline, very mean and very mouthy with us kids. And, it had reached a point where I'd come home, like a second grader shouldn't come home from school crying because his teacher was being a bitch all day. Right. And my mom had kind of had it. And so she requested a meeting with Mrs. Hamright, and she has this meeting with Mrs. Hamright, and it started off pretty contentiously. And about halfway through the meeting, it started to shift. And the truth was that Mrs. Hamright had just lost her husband of 60 years before the school year began, and that her sister had terminal cancer, and that her world was literally falling apart around her. And all that she had was the school, and she was going to be forced to retire at the end of that year. And she didn't know what she was going to do. And my mom and Mrs. Hamright ended up becoming great friends until Mrs. Hamright passed. And so that's such a poignant lesson your mother taught you, because it's, you never know what somebody's going through. I might be a little overly optimistic, but I truly believe that most human beings want to be good at heart and do the right thing. And so when a human being comes at you out of nowhere with spite and anger, and it's not related to this movement or what we're talking about with Trump or any of that, you really have to, and even with some of those cases, right? You really have to take a step back and be like, what is this person really screaming for? What are they really looking for? It's not just simple attention. There's something deep inside them that they need help with and they don't know how to ask. And it's just so I remember that like it was yesterday, and I could still see Mrs. Hamright, you know, coming into my mom's fabric store and buying fabric from her, and they're talking for hours and stuff. And it was all just because my mom, as a Christian, reached out and open the conversation, which is what this show is all about, right? The world changes one conversation at a time.
Yeah.
And the rest of that school year was wonderful. Like, Mrs. Hamright had found somebody to vent in and, you know, had got to get her emotions out, and her attitude almost instantly changed. I still remember that to this day. And I was so young at that time. And there was another instance in sixth grade. I had moments of being a complete bastard in school. I would get my work done really fast and then start being the class clown. And that was that. I was a complete jackass. There's no excuse for it. I was just a little jackass. And so one day in sixth grade art class, my dance teacher, she was...
You're what now?
art dance class. It was one of those medial liberal bullshit middle school classes that nobody ever paid attention in. It usually served as a paper football class because the tables
were the perfect size. Did you wear jazz shoes?
I did not.
Were there toe shoes involved?
There were not.
Okay.
It was a dance class in name. It was a dino dance in name. So she was rambling on at the front of the class, and I made a smart comment, and she said something back to me. She said, fine, don't learn anything. It's no skin off my back. And she was a very flat-chested woman. She was a carpenter's dream. And I fired back to her and said, I don't even know what side is your back. And she sent me to the principal's office, and I got in-school suspension for that. And well, so I had to call my mom and
reasonable.
Tell her. Yeah, totally reasonable. And so I call my mom, and she's like, what did you say? And I'm like, being a 12-year-old kid, I don't want to tell mom what I said, because in my mind that knows everything at the time, she'll never find out what I actually said. Yeah. Not realizing mom's just going to hang up the damn phone, call the school, and find out what I said anyway. So she comes and picks me up, takes me home. I was definitely punished for what I said. And then mom said, not only am I punishing you for this, but we're going up to the school right now. You're going to go to Ms. Owens. You're going to apologize to her, and you're going to tell her you were wrong. And so we talk about loser's consent and being wrong and admitting when you're wrong. That's one of the instances I can look back to in my life and say, that's when mom taught me the difference between right and wrong, and that you're not just going to get away with being a little sarcastic smartass. And when I say I got punished, it wasn't a finger wagging in my face. It was old school. My mom came from the 1950s. Your ass is getting wound up for talking to somebody like that, because I didn't raise you like that.
Well, yeah, and the you have to go and apologize and make it right feature of my childhood as well, for me and my brother, right? If we wrong someone, we had to go make it right, which you don't want to do, right?
You know, and that's especially a total, like, pride ego deal too. You don't want to drop your ego and admit you're wrong.
Yeah, and that is, like, now, you know, it rarely happens, but when I am wrong, I will admit it now because of that lesson.
I do it as well. There's been plenty of cue takes and things about the movement I've been wrong about. I'm pretty staunch about getting out in front and saying, yep, I was wrong on that one. My bad. Turns out I can't tell the future. Yeah. You know, there's plenty of things we're all wrong about that.
Yeah.
As long as you are accountable with yourself, it's fine to be wrong. That's, we've talked about that on this show before too, that so many people in this movement have lost sight that it's okay to be wrong. It's fine to throw an opinion or a theory out there and be completely batshit wrong about it. That's how you find out that it's wrong, by talking about it and talking it through.
Yeah, no, it's such a great point, because that is, you know, we talk about fear a lot, right? And how, like, fear can paralyze people. Well, fear of what? A lot of times it's fear of being wrong, fear of losing status, fear of looking stupid, fear of saying the wrong thing, right? Stupid fears. Like, who gives a shit? That is something that I don't think I fully appreciated until I got into my 40s. And it was just like, wait a second. And I learned early on in corporate America that everybody's making it up. In a consulting firm, you learn that really quickly, because right. They're literally making it up. They're literally, oh, we don't know how to do that. Okay, let's define a process. Let's pull this together. Let's do these things. And I, like, right. So that was, you know, easy. But this idea, this imposter syndrome idea that all these other adults in whatever environment that you're in all of that, all of these adults, they have it all together. They have it all figured out. They're all doing things the right way, and you're awkward and don't belong, and you're going to say something dumb and all that kind of stuff. I'm so glad to be rid of that, because that was a big part of, you know, being me and being a woman in a male dominated industry with some of the smartest people, right? All the MITs and Harvards and all those people worked for PwC when I was there, and I was, you know, writing stuff for them, but not an MIT, obviously, science denier, not an MIT graduate. And, you know, so much imposter syndrome. And then you get to the end of the day, it's like they're just despicable people behind the scenes. Yeah. And that it's so much the prioritization of the worldly definition of success and happiness and what we're supposed to strive for is something that my mother never painted for me. My father did. My father was, you know, I mean, he was a very successful businessman and painted that path forward. But my mother, it was always, and it was about character for my father too, but for my mother, it was always about character. It was always about who you are as a person. And that is what, I think in a lot of ways made me the person that I am, but really defined how I mother my kids as well, because I don't coddle them. I'm not a helicopter mom. I'm free range parent more than anything else, but I don't care about their grades. I don't care what career they pursue. I care that they are good men, that they are men after God's heart, who are critical thinkers able to navigate the world.
Yeah.
And so shout out to the moms.
There's interesting you bring up imposter syndrome as well, because that's another big thing my mom helped me with. And sometimes our parents can give us advice that we hear, but we're not listening to it at the time. It gets up there and gets stuck and it stays up there, but it's kind of toward the back where you can't recall it immediately. And back in 2014, when I landed the gig as the chef for the Charlotte Hornets, full disclosure, I bullshitted my way completely through that interview because I wanted the job that bad, right? And it was the kind of gig where I got the job, and I remember getting home like, holy shit, I actually just got that job. And I remember showing up for the first day at work, dude, and looking at the menu we had to prepare for the game that night. And there were a couple things in the menu I legit had no idea how to make. And I'm like, oh, thank God for smartphones, because I'm going to the high seas of Google and Googling how to do this. And that's how I got through the first month and a half of that job, and then ended up just kind of taking off with it and doing really well. But I remember coming home from work some nights and just being filled with this, like, man, I should not be here. Like, this is absolutely crazy. I don't deserve this. And the thing my mom told me that I forgot until a few years later at that time was, you know, you can't really name me anything God hasn't gotten you through, and you're exactly where you should be. So why do you feel like you don't belong here? And so that had kind of gotten buried at the time in the back of my head. I guess I wasn't ready to receive it. I was doing a lot of things that weren't very good to my mind, body, or soul at that time. And a few years later, fast forward to 2023, the beginning of 2023 is when I got my purple belt in jiu-jitsu, and the imposter syndrome kicked in again, because it's like, oh man, like that, now it's gotten real. Like you've been doing it a long time. It's the statistics with jiu-jitsu are 90% of folks who get to their purple belt will get to their black belt, yet only 3% of people that begin jiu-jitsu even get to their purple belt. So for me, it felt like, whoa, like, what did I even do to earn this? And it lasted for maybe an hour, because that was when that advice from mom decided to ring back into my head. You're here because you're supposed to be, dude. You earned it. Stop doubting it. And that was that. And it was such another important lesson taught from her. I mean, we could literally have this show going till midnight, trading lessons that our mothers have taught us, man. They sound very, very similar. And it actually, I was telling Barbara before we came on air, it pains me a little bit that mom never got to meet you, because you were my mom's kind of person. Like, you two would have been buddies. I'm pretty sure y'all would have been talking on the phone often. You are the way you're kind of a spitfire when you latch on to something. That's exactly how my mom was, man. You two would have gotten along so well.
Oh, I love that. All right. Well, we have sponsors for the show.
We do.
And so why don't we hit the first couple of our sponsors, and then we will kind of shift a little bit and talk about lies told to children.
Let's do that. Let's talk about your Patriot store first. I talk about these folks now. It's kind of like a Patriot super grown up version of Spencer's. Patriots, are you ready to show your unwavering support for our troops, law enforcement, and our country? It's time to visit your one-stop shop for all things patriotic, your Patriot store. At your Patriot store, you'll find the perfect gear to showcase your American pride, from brands you know and love like Grunt Style and Nine Line to everyday accessories for your home, pet, and auto. But that's not all. Discover new brands you're sure to love, from hand grenade hot sauce to bold 2A glassware to veteran-owned beef jerky and more. Shop for everything from flagpole kits to flags and even Patriot tees for every day of the week. Your Patriot store is also home of the buy two, get one on us. Buy two shirts, get one free. Coffee, hats, stickers, flagpoles. Buy two like items and get the third one for free. And get this, if you use the promo code BADLANDS35 at checkout, you'll get a huge 35% off your entire purchase. Don't wait any longer, friends. Head on over to badlandsmedia.tv/Patriot Store and use the code BADLANDS35 to show your patriotism without breaking the bank. That's badlandsmedia.tv/Patriot Store. Promo code BADLANDS35.
And are you concerned about the $6 trillion at stake in the upcoming 2024 election? The Wall Street Journal has reported a critical issue, the looming decision on extending tax cuts, that are scheduled to expire after 2025. Republicans advocate for extending the Trump tax cuts, while Democrats lean towards letting them expire and increasing taxes on top earners and corporations, potentially creating a $6 trillion gap. But fear not, There's a way to protect yourself from this impending threat. Join thousands of hardworking Americans who are taking proactive steps to safeguard their savings. Visit BadlandsGold.com to claim your free 2024 gold and silver kit and fortify everything that you've worked for. You may even qualify for up to 10% back in bonus silver, but hurry, supplies are limited. Don't leave your financial future to chance. Act now to diversify and shield your savings against the uncertainties ahead. Get your free 2024 gold and silver kit today at BadlandsGold.com and take control of your financial destiny. All right. So what are we taught? What are we taught when we're kids?
We're taught that you should, or we're talking about from not Sherry's from our parents family. At this point, right? Like we're taught
right. The in world. General. What is this society? Yeah. And we're going to go from like kids, right? Like sharing is caring, everything I know, I need to know, I learned in kindergarten kind of stuff, to the young adults. Cause I think, you know, one of the big pushbacks from the millennial generation is that they were promised a world that doesn't exist. And I think that that's true. And it's been true for a long time, but like the Gen X generation was just like, oh, great. The world doesn't exist. You know, the world that I believed in doesn't exist. I'm just going to take my piece of it. And I think that's kind of true, too. Right. And that worked for a while until the overt communism became impossible to ignore. But going to kids, you know, sharing is caring. I think that's an interesting one. I did not like it when my kids had play dates and there was like the super selfish kid that came over and he would just grab the toy, he or she, not being right. biased, or they. No, he or she, children we're talking about. They would just take the toy, and then the reaction to that from a kindergarten classroom standpoint or a, you know, empathy Olympics standpoint would be just, you know, well, sharing is caring, Paul. Give that kid your toy. And my response was always like, no, like why is the one child not allowed to play with the toy why does the other kid get rewarded for not sharing and not saying please and being kind of despicable?
I mean, sharing is all good and grand to an extent. There's a line, right? I love you and I'll share things with you. I'm also not going to give you 200 rounds of my 45 ACP ammo just to give it to you because sharing is caring. That's stupid. You know, It's like, again, it also makes me think of the show and tell premise, mm-hmm. the whole concept behind that. Come and show some things you have. To me, that always felt like building materialism, building a want for material things, and not just material things, but kind of building a subconscious want in kids to have something better than the person next to them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that position, that kinda, the desire of what you're meant to pursue.
Right. Right. And, which I guess kind of, you know, kind of vibes with sharing is caring, and sharing is caring is straight. That's kind of like early conditioning of communism, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it can be, right. There's no intention here to say that everything that we learned as children was meant to drive communism.
Right.
I think I could probably make that case in Colorado in terms of what children are being taught now. But in terms of what I was taught in Georgia in the 80s and 90s, I don't think that's true. But I do think that the vast majority of what we're taught as children was meant to drive compliance.
Yeah.
Compliance with this societal construct that we're in. And we haven't seen tons of innovation and, you know, deviation from, you know, there's your urban centers and then there's your suburban sprawl and then there's your rural and there's, right. you know, the house and the picket fence and the two kids and the dog and the, you know, there's been people that have deviated from that. But I think that desire for that dream, which by the way, is a construct, it's not the American dream. I don't know if you had a chance to see, but I know some of our audience saw BB and Chris Paul's review on Story Hour of Gangs of New York and right. the whole conversation about Native Americans. I don't know if you caught that.
Bits and pieces.
That Native Americans at that time were the generation of Americans. You know, they were descendants of the Americans who founded the country And that was what made them Native Americans. And so in the time period of Gangs of New York, it's the natives fighting the immigrants. And it had right. nothing to do with indigenous or first peoples. It had to do with the, you know, the construct of America. But the American dream should be the Bill of Rights. It should yeah. be liberty. It should be the ability to live without government interference in these certain areas. And we could have expanded those areas over time. Instead, we eroded the Bill of Rights and we've erected this massive government establishment locally, statewide, nationally, certainly, and as we talk about on this show every single week, globally. And that that, you know, that idea that you have to, not have to, should, whether it's pursuit of materialism and keeping up with the Joneses and wanting something better than the person next to you, or whether it's a, you know, I want to be the best in this field because I'm driven to be the best at something, the elites, all that kind of stuff. It's within the construct of driving towards globalism and rampant consumerism and all of those kinds of things. And more feels like way more rapidly now in, you know, this modern period than in the generations and decades leading up to this. But the erosion of rights, you know, I did a half an hour with the head of the Rocky Mountain Gun Owners today on the Colorado show, talking about how the fight to disarm Coloradans goes back, you know, 10 plus years. I mean, certainly longer than that, but this push goes back. They're very patient in trying to take those rights away from us. And then they see their moment and they pounce. Way too often we're catching up. We're playing catch up when, you know, and reacting to the moves of somebody who's being very strategic and is very patient. So, yeah. Call sign Cujo, 2019 was the red flag law brought by two Republicans, in Colorado, but the push to erode, gun rights goes back. I think he said that their organization was founded in the 90s, late 90s. Maybe even before that. I just had this conversation. It's insane that I don't remember.
It's not like you're busy or anything.
Well, it's because I didn't write it down. If I hear something and I don't write it down, it doesn't stick.
It happens. Depends on what it is. If numbers are involved, I'll probably remember it. If numbers aren't involved, gone.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the, you know, like in thinking about, this is kind of, I don't know, nebulous, this discussion that we're having. But like, what are the other things we're told? Real estate is always a good investment. The prioritization of the left brain visual learner education system that totally disenfranchises, you know, the majority of children who don't learn that way. And it right. is the majority of children that don't learn that way. The fact of the matter is our education system is designed by people that do learn that way. And they think right. everybody should learn just like them. And there's mountains of science that prove that it's ineffective. It's why we have alternative schooling. It's why we have charter schools and all those kinds of things, because the regular, you know, the Rothschild education system, Rockefeller education system, is not developed to create excellence and brilliant minds. And you think about, you know, go back to the people that founded the country, largely homeschooled, right. apprentices, learn by doing, and, you know, lifelong critical thinkers and lifelong learners. And that's what we should, if we want to protect the Bill of Rights, we want to protect the American experiment, the real American dream, we should be prioritizing free thinking and, you know, people that will preserve liberty because it's so important to them. Kids aren't even taught about liberty anymore.
No, they're not. They're not taught about liberty. They're not taught about a lot of things, which is, I love that, because that's literally what I was going to bring up next, was that in addition to some of the lies that they're taught and told these days, what about the obvious absences of knowledge and information and life lessons they should be getting that they're not? There was once upon a time, I mean, most high schools nowadays, you're going to be hard pressed to find a shop class. You're going to be hard pressed to find a mechanics class. You're going to be hard pressed to find a home economics class.
Because they monetize the trades.
Right. And so what that has done is it, it literally takes knowledge away from children that could lead to self-sustainability in the future. If you're taking a shop class, you know how to build things. You don't need to rely on somebody to come fix and repair your home or to build things around your homestead. If you're taking home economics and things of that nature, you know how to handle a house, how to build or how to operate within the confines of a house, how to cook, how to do things like that. You know how to handle your yard. You know how to plant gardens. You know how to tend to your gardens. These are things knowledge they've taken away from kids. They don't even teach you how to balance a fucking checkbook in school. Yeah. They don't. They'll tell you about credit and they'll tell you, yeah, go get your credit. This is good. This is the system you want to fall into, but they won't actually teach you how to keep track of that money and not end up in a hole. They omit a lot. And that almost to me is as heinous as lying, is omitting and taking options of learning away from kids that could lead them towards sustainability of themselves in the future, which you look around right now, being a self-sustaining person, I feel is going to be pretty important in the next couple years.
100%. I love how you talked about credit, because it's another thing that we're told, you know, probably more as young adults and or, you know, adolescents and young adults, but that the full faith and credit of the people of the United States of America.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one that it's so on the nose when you think about it more than two layers deep. But it is this, you know, it is essentially the concept of debt slavery, but we're told to have pride in it.
Right. Like, be happy that your credit score is 800. That means we'll loan you just enough money to completely fuck you over if something bad ever happens to you. That's exactly what it is. And even look at the war on drugs through the 80s and 90s and the DARE program and all of that. You know, I'm not necessarily against everything that was taught in that program. There are certainly drugs I'm very, very against. But at the same time, all drugs are evil and bad, really? All of them? Because I don't think all of them are. And I think there's some of them that are very helpful to human beings.
Nancy Dustin Reagan judges you.
Right. Well, look, I'm one of the few Republicans who I'm not even a Republican, really, but one of the few conservatives who I'll call Reagan on the shit he did that wasn't terribly great. But I also do that while acknowledging who his vice president was and the fact that they shot him, and he probably did a lot of things against his will because of that.
Yep. Yep. All right. So speaking of the full faith and credit of the United States, shout out to Observing Consciousness on Twitter, posted this video the other day. I have no idea what show this is, but I think this is hilarious and just so perfectly goes with this show in particular, the concept of this show, but also with the concept of the full faith and credit of the people of the United States of America. So here we go.
Done. I win.
Cheryl, it's not a race.
That's what losers say.
What is that?
The truth.
Every time a new baby is born, the Federal Reserve issues a secret birth certificate printed by a company called the American Bank. That way, the government can use people as currency to back the debt they have with the World Economic Forum, which owns the central banks of every nation on Earth. But the WEF is just a front for the Council on Foreign Relations, which masterminded the 9/11 attacks as a pretext to invade Iraq, take the oil, and install fast food chains to make people slow, fat, and easily abductable by the shape-shifting reptilian aliens it works with. Now, back in the 30s, FDR made a deal with these reptilians to exchange people for technology. That was the basis of the New Deal. But ever since, they've been slowly replacing all the world leaders to create a nuclear holocaust to make global warming real for their takeover. That's how they made up the Cold War, by sending Laika to space to bite Neil Armstrong while Kubrick was faking the moon landing. Now they're using satellite waves, contrails, and measles vaccines as mind control and fluoridating the water to keep people's gold fillings intact so they can be sent back to, you guessed it, the Federal Reserve, where all the gold and birth certificates are stored by the real puppet master, the world monarch, who is himself only the servant of the all-seeing eye who controls everything in the world.
I was wrong. You do win.
Did you notice that the poster on the wall behind him was a goat?
No, I didn't.
Indeed it was. That was absolutely.
Nobody knows what show that is. Put it in the chat because I have no idea.
I can't recall the name, but I'm about 90% certain. Like,
preteen shows have gotten unfathomably more based since the last time I watched one.
Right? I don't remember freaking. I don't remember Donald Duck being like that. I don't remember Saved by the Bell dropping red pills like that. Holy shit! was I can't recall the name of that show. I'm fairly certain it's a Netflix show though, which makes it even freaking crazier. I'll try to find out the name of it while you chat.
Yeah. Anyway, lies were told as children. And so why? I think we talked about a little bit that they're driving compliance. You're meant to go through your 12 years of school. Then, you know, if you're of the right station, go to university and pursue a white collar job. If you're of the wrong station or the other stations, then you're meant to go to trades, right? As Paul said, we used to learn trades in school. So all kids could have access to a skill set that they can fall back upon. But that wasn't as profitable as, you know, it was way more profitable to take that stuff out of schools and put it in trade school that students will then go and incur debt for. And then you're meant to pursue, but then you're still, once you're out of that indoctrination system, then you're meant to go and pursue the American dream, which basically means have more than your neighbors. You need to buy a house. This is one of the things that's very frustrating for millennials and Gen Z is that they are priced out of buying homes. And you know, they are in a lot of, certainly in the major metro areas. Here in Denver, it's damn near out of reach for most people to buy a new home. It's, you know, is what it is. And you're meant to pursue the career path, whichever one, whether you're in the, you know, trade lane or the white collar professional lane, you're meant to pursue that and get all the things, get the mortgage, get the two cars, the two new cars with the high payments, all of the, you know, carrying costs of those, the insurance and all of the things. You're meant to have children, but not more than two. And now it's kind of encouraged to not to, right? Because you're being replaced by other populations in the world. But even when we were growing up, you know, have children, but don't have too big of a family. And we're going to, you know, this is going to take us to climate, obviously. We'll get there here in a few minutes. But up until the kind of, you know, latest climate hysteria, which if I'm not mistaken, began in the late 70s, but really hit a fever pitch in the late 90s and into the 2000s, and then Inconvenient Truth, and then everybody lost their damn minds. Prior to that, there was enough societal social pressure to force people to kind of stay in that lane. And people who went out of the lane of you need to pursue building your own kingdom, for lack of a better word, but never, you know, it's confined within the circumstances and geography that you're born in and what, you know, your skill sets are, who your parents are, all of that stuff certainly exists. All of those drivers of pursuing the American dream certainly exist. And I think we're a big part, in my view, a big part of the awakening that we're experiencing, certainly in the last 4 years since the stolen election, but for, you know, time before that, is institutional collapse. We're seeing people lose trust in the institutions to such a great degree that they're starting to question everything. Like, wait a second, do I really want, like, women questioning, wait a second, should I really have spent the past 20 years, you know, making all of these oligarchs way richer while my children were raised by other people? Maybe I didn't actually want that. Maybe that was something right. that was sold to me and I bought it because I thought it was meant to, but it wasn't actually something that I wanted.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And before I reply, like, I don't know, 120 seconds ago, you said to not to, and this was all I could think of.
What did I tell you about talking to the accused? To not to.
I would be lying if I said I didn't quote Mater often.
I would be lying if I said I didn't have multiple Mater Matchbox toys around the car, as well as a stuffed Mater that's about this big that my mom bought me, because back when Barbara broke her leg at the end of 06 going into 07, all we could do was sit there and watch movies. And one of the movies we watched was Cars, and Mom sat there and watched it with us, and we all fell in love with Mater. So it was kind of a thing between me and Mom. So of course you would quote Mater.
I think I was just thinking back to Why We Vote. I think on Why We Vote, I think I pulled the kind of Mater responses on Brian several times. Yeah, we really need to do that, but we're not gonna though.
He did what in his cup? That's one of my favorite Mater quotes. The show in question was called Disjointed, and it was about cannabis legend Rush Whitefeather Feldman employs her newly graduated son and a team of young bud tenders to help her run her Los Angeles marijuana dispensary. Turns out the show was canceled a couple episodes after that scene.
Oh, no way.
Yep. Absolutely.
Because of course it was.
Right. Why wouldn't it have been? Yeah, I remember, I think Barbara had gotten into that show a few years back, last kitchen job I had. She said it was funnier than hell, and there was a couple more red-pilled moments in it. So perhaps that's why it got the boot.
Incredible. That's so funny that's how that happened. Why don't we get into our next couple sponsors, and then we will talk about our current macro PSYOP, which is a lie being told to children and adolescents and teenagers and young adults and not young adults and old adults.
Just everybody. It's being told to everybody.
At every level of indoctrination.
But before we do that, let's talk about some awesome freeze-dried beef. Badlanders, have you ordered No Bugs beef yet? Having enough protein to feed your family for several months is essential for your survival. Veteran-owned No Bugs Beef offers freeze-dried beef cubes and freezer boxes with steaks and roasts, all made from high-quality, all-American cattle, and designed to last for up to 20 years, making them the perfect choice for long-term food storage. Whether you're stocking up your doomsday bunker or just looking for a convenient and delicious meal option, No Bugs Beef has you covered. Enjoy delicious, high-quality beef anytime, anywhere, knowing that you're prepared for whatever the future may hold, and start enjoying peace of mind along with your delicious meals. Get your family prepared for the chaos at badlandsmedia.tv/nobugs. And don't forget to use the promo code BADLANDS for an even bigger discount, 15% off. That's badlandsmedia.tv/nobugs, promo code BADLANDS.
All right, everybody. And in the heart of Malmo, Minnesota, a family-led team at Beamish Metalworks is crafting not just metal art, but personalized, timeless masterpieces. Beamish Metalworks is pioneering metal-on-wood creations. Imagine a piece of art that's not confined by generic designs, but is a narrative of your persona, your memories, or your dreams. From the elegance of an office centerpiece to the wild spirit of hunting and fishing scenes, your imagination is the only limit. Dive into the realm of endless possibilities with Beamish customization, where your space becomes a reflection of you with the distinct vibe that only Beamish Metalworks can offer. Beamish Metalworks proudly supports local heroes and events, from veteran fundraisers to law enforcement gatherings, embedding ourselves as a pillar of support and gratitude. Don't miss out on owning your very own Badlands Media sign and new Badlands Media license plate from Beamish Metalworks. Visit Beamish Metalworks today at badlandsmedia.tv/metalart and use promo code Badlands for free shipping. That's badlandsmedia.tv/metalart. Promo code Badlands, and you can see the license plate and the sign there on the video, and we both have our Badlands signs here, and they really, I can't say enough how well made they are. They're really, really solid construction, beautiful, and I've got the Trump Punisher also from Beamish behind me under the boomerang.
My Trump Punisher hangs up above me. Not above me, but right in front of me. So it's not on camera, but it's above my JFK bust and my little sign with a cutout cross that says "Be the Light." I figured that was a great spot for a Trump Punisher.
Yeah, mine is sitting right there with the boomerang, waiting Love for it. The boomerangs.
Love it. Love it. And I can't say enough good things about No Bugs Beef either. I was thoroughly impressed with everything I've had from them. And as I'm sure your husband will attest, as an overly anal chef about quality, getting a chef to speak well about freeze-dried foods, good luck.
Yeah, fair. Fair point. I want to just point out this. Kelly says, whenever you say that, I just want you to know how much I agree. I have a whole story on that subject. She's talking about being sold this working mother, this is what you want. This is the essence of making it.
At some point, they literally vilified motherhood. They literally vilified wanting to stay at home and be a mother and take care of your children and raise a family. Now, to be clear, if a woman wants to be independent and have a career and be a working woman, that's fine. I'm not against that. But I'm saying they did something nefarious to make women not want to be homemakers. There's also nothing wrong with being a homemaker. There's nothing at all. it's something
you're to be literally respected. Mansplaining my woman's story right now,
right? Well, because there's a lot of men out there who don't get it that it matters. They've taken it right with the trans shit. They've just taken everything taught, about women away.
Like, we were taught that it's what we want. We were taught right. that the height of success as a woman is to be very successful in a career and have a family, and somehow that works. Right. Like without, any of the not taught about all the trade-offs, not taught about what you're going to miss, not taught about how much it steals part of your soul to spend so much time making other people boatloads of money.
Right.
Kelly and I talked about that at one of the GARTs, and I just appreciate you so much, Kelly. And I think that we've got to stop lying to children.
It's like, oh, I'm sorry, honey. Mommy had to miss your birthday again because she's a successful working woman. And that's the stuff they don't tell you when they convinced women that it was okay to, or rather not okay, but when they convinced women that that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And it's, I remember my mom bringing that up years ago too. And she worked as well, but it was, it never overrode her need to take care of or be there for her family was the thing. And that's kind of what they've driven into a lot of young women and women today is, no, you need to be work driven and nose to the grindstone. If you miss your kid's birthday, it's okay. If you miss a graduation, it's fine because you're setting up their future. And it's not okay to miss those moments for your kid. And it's not okay that people are taught that and herded toward that.
Right. I completely agree. So loads of lies told to us, not just when we're children, but all throughout our lives to get us to choose certain paths and to prioritize certain things over other things. We have kind of the macro. Yeah, open up the actual article, if you will.
Yeah.
We have the macro level PSYOP that's running through right now. And of course, it has many different flavors. You've got to swap the tab that you're sharing. Many different flavors in it, but climate is, so I first started getting climate change narrative that I can remember in the sixth grade. So how old is sixth grade? What is that, like 11?
I don't know.
11, 12-ish, something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
So, you know, start that conditioning early, and it's definitely starting earlier now, because one of the first shows that Culture of Change did was the Sustainable Development Goals targeting to actual children through Thomas the Tank Engine. And Thomas the Tank Engine was going through and talking about all of the, you know, all how the Sustainable Development Goals are just, they're so important to be such a good global citizen that you need to know them and embrace them. So this, the climate, because it is kind of the perfect PSYOP, right?
Yeah.
If you oppose us, you want the planet to die.
Right. It's got a built-in defense mechanism already. Like a perfect built-in defense. And are you kidding me? This woman's name is Virginia Furness. She's writing an article about global warming and her last name is Furness. Come on, man. I know it's spelled differently, but come on.
It's what like a journey joke. Made off.
Right. It's, you know, Sam Bank Fried Man.
Bank Come Man on. Fried. Yeah.
Like, oh.
All right. So exclusive. Reuters exclusive, everyone. Corporate climate watchdog document deems carbon offsets largely ineffective. Now, what are carbon offsets? This is the carbon swapping that it's why companies, global corporations can be out there saying, yes, net zero, et cetera, we're super excited, we're all on board with climate. They're not actually having to change all that much. They're just purchasing offsets. It's just like, we'll pay money so we can be super polluty. That's how they're getting to net zero, by the way. Like when you talk, it's like, how is it that all these climate people can fly around on their private jets and blah, blah, blah? Because they've purchased offsets. So they can fly around on their private jets and say, yeah, I'm net zero on this. You can't be net zero, which is why you have to stop eating meat and driving SUVs and eat the bugs and live in a, you know, what is it that they're the not the 15-minute city, but the Saudi Arabian one, the wall thing. I'm not making any sense right now.
And I'm not able.
So in Saudi Arabia, they're building this experimental city that's like a mirrored wall. It looks like a giant lithium battery, and they're just shoving people into it, in my view. The line, Bianca, thank you. The line in Saudi Arabia. Like, that's what they're driving us to. Is the, you know, we talked about the debt slaves up to this point. When you add in climate, it gets so much more nefarious.
It really does. It absolutely does. Because like you said, it's got the built-in defense. It's extremely hard to go against it because, well, you just want the planet to be destroyed. You don't care about the planet.
Yeah. It's polar bears. And hang on a second. I have to deal with my children. Can you read this? Because I need to scream at some boys right now.
Of course I can read this. All right. So it starts off, friends. London, May 9th, Reuters. Staff at an influential corporate climate action group whose board announced a plan to allow companies to offset greenhouse gas emissions from their supply chain with carbon credits has now found such offsets are largely ineffective, a confidential preliminary draft reviewed by Reuters shows. At stake is the growth of the still nascent market for voluntary carbon offsets. While they're used by some of the world's biggest companies, including Microsoft, Salesforce, and Amazon, the size of the market remains small at around $2 billion. The Science-Based Targets Initiative, SBTI, a UN-backed nonprofit that audits the emission reduction plans of companies, triggered a revolt among staff last month by declaring its intention to allow use of carbon credits prior to concluding its research on them. Since then, the SBTI's Board of Trustees has issued a clarification to state it had not yet changed its policy and that any decisions would be informed by the evidence. The findings in the SPDI staff document seen by Reuters have not been previously reported upon. They are based on a review of evidence in scientific papers and other submissions by interested parties and a consultation. The findings
Yep. Yeah. So first of all, let's talk about the revolt among the staff of the Science-Based Targets Initiative, who had decided to include carbon offsets as a target, even though it wasn't science-based. And the staff was like, no, wait a second. No, we're not doing that. So kudos to those guys. They're probably, you know, radical environmentalists, but sticking to their guns on science, you know, on the science-based aspect of carbon offsets is a good thing. I think we should celebrate that.
Yeah, I think so. So I think it was a few weeks ago on this show, you said that one of the exciting things you were seeing insofar as the movement and not necessarily the movement, but the waking up of this planet and getting away from the DEI woke bullshit is that corporations are starting to realize their bottom dollar is being really, really hurt by all of this stuff. And it seems like a weird reason to get encouraged over, but when they start seeing their dollars flying out the window, hand over fist, they're going to start to revert on what it is that's causing them to lose all that money. That's just a simple fact of corporations and economics. And that's what you had pointed out is that a lot of these corporations are starting to kind of tiptoe backwards now because they're realizing they're losing money. So that's, to me personally, I think that's only going to snowball as we move forward. We're going to see more and more corporations. Today, Target announced they're pulling damn near all of their Pride merchandise from their stores because of the backlash. So it took a minute, but us firing back and speaking up and speaking to our truth worked.
Yeah, exactly. So why, Great Reset to the New World Order is the answer, obviously.
Yep.
To move us out of, so we talked at the beginning of this about how we're steered toward a specific lane to want a specific thing, certainly as Americans, right? We'll take it into the, you know, American dream and the education system that we had and what we've been steered toward all of our lives, younger generations less so, but, you know, through Gen X and probably older millennials steered to want this definition of the American dream. And now that definition of the American dream is actually poisoning the earth, and it's your fault. And you now have to radically change your life. Or you hate the planet and you're going to kill all of the grandmas and polar bears.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. Every time I hear somebody go on a brand new climate screech, I'm always reminded of a Drew Carey stand-up from way back in the late 90s where he's talking about climate change and greenhouse gases, and he's literally standing there with a can of hairspray, and he says, dude, I'm from Cleveland. I don't fucking care about the climate. I'm cold now. and I got to find that clip because it's one of the funniest things ever. But it's basically, it's what you said. I think the very first episode of this show I ever did with you was about the climate boogeyman and how it's been foisted upon everybody and how we almost have no recourse to fight it because of science. And it's, you're absolutely dead on with it. It is their biggest boogeyman. It is the thing they use to scare people tacitly into submission and compliance. It doesn't involve weapons. It doesn't involve boots on the ground, but it involves your slow tacit compliance and submission over years. And we've seen that. We're seeing it.
So Secrets gave us a Rumble Rant, which is a throwback to last night's DPH. So I'm going to read it, and then I have to give the context of it because it was taken out of context on the show. Not one taco, many tacos, also mohap. So Brian, last night during DPH, Brian's saga of trying to make it through the Taco Bell drive-thru line and back home. And then when he got home, he had the wrong burrito. It was a whole big thing. And it was a part of the show effectively because they kept pulling it in. But at one point he said, I spent $20 at Taco Bell for one person. And then I think it was Patrick or it might've been John said, he spent $20 on one taco. And I said, not one taco, many tacos. Now, the second part of my tweet or my rant was that Patrick had said, I would let a stone can con do brain surgery on me. And I said, I wouldn't let can con operate on me unless we were in a war zone. And then I'd be very thankful for his medical experience. If we were in a war zone and I needed a doctor, a medic, I'd be happy Brian was there. But other than that, so anyway, it came out as not one taco, many tacos. Also, I won't let Brian operate me. And the on was missing. So then it turned into like, then all of a sudden they're calling me a lesbian and asking me about my college experiences because I'm talking about taco. It was.
So yeah. Basically it spiraled into an abject failure.
Not failure.
I mean, it sounds like it was funnier than shit. So I won't say it was
John
a failure,
and Patrick
but...
and Chris. So it, yeah. Anyway, thank you so much, Secrets for the rant.
One of my guilty pleasures that I make no secret of is I join Brian and his Taco Bell brotherhood, and I just want to shout Brian out and thank him for the heads up that the new chicken cantina menu is complete ass, because I was thinking about trying one of those soon, and he was like, no, that's terrible, don't do it. I was like, okay, thanks for the heads up, my Taco Bell brethren.
Liv Moss. Yeah, and here's the thing, is that cantina chicken sound like the new cantina chicken menu makes it sound like there's something specific about the chicken, that there's something nuanced about that chicken that makes it different than the other chicken. And the answer to that is no. That's what Brian's feedback is. It's just the regular damn chicken. What is this?
It's the regular chicken with some green sauce and cabbage thrown in.
And there's guacamole, I think, in the cantina chicken menu.
Right.
Wow. It's messed up.
Glad for the heads up, though. That was a really good heads up because I'm not proud of it, but I have a slight issue with Taco Bell. I can't help it.
Yeah. I love Taco Bell. I'm not going to apologize for it. And I don't care.
I don't eat McDonald's. That counts, right? That's good.
I'd eat some McDonald's. I don't eat fast food as a regular thing. I eat like fruit and cheese and a lot of eggs. And then whatever my husband cooks because I married a chef. Tonight we're having Cobb salads. It's what I want. He said, you know, my husband's a chef. Have whatever you want. What do you want for dinner? And really what I want a big bowl of crunchy lettuce with red onions and diced tomatoes and blue cheese and shredded cheddar cheese and hard-boiled eggs and bacon and some grilled chicken and a red wine vinaigrette. So that's what I'm having because that's what I asked.
That sounds incredibly good. Doesn't it? I had one a few weeks ago and I bought one of the little, 5-ounce containers of blue cheese, and Barbara's watching me make my salad. She doesn't eat blue cheese. I am addicted to it. I literally take the container and dump all of it into the salad. And she was like, what are you doing? I'm like, making the salad delicious. Look, get that comment off screen, man. That's divorceable. That is, yes, mold.
Actually, are you going to divorce Roger too?
No, I love, look at that beard. How can you divorce that beard?
There you go.
I found out that but I've talked about on this show before, just in our random rantings, that when I was a kid, I was allergic to penicillin, like really allergic to penicillin. And I found out only a couple months ago that if you can eat blue cheese, then you're not allergic to penicillin, which means I've clearly outgrown that allergy to the world's most effective antibiotic. And I'm very, very thankful for that.
Yeah, that's exciting.
That has no relevance whatsoever on this episode, but that's what we do.
LKW Cross, thank you for the Rumble Rant. Great show. Thank you, Ash and Paul. Thank you. We appreciate it. And everybody, please do hit that thumb. Give us the old thumbs up button. We would very much appreciate it. And yeah, I love blue cheese too. I'm going to go eat that salad here in a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I had one video I wanted to play to wrap things up, and it's a little longer than most. So we could probably start wrapping up anytime you want. And I can give a little context to it because it doesn't really fit with the lies children are told, but it kind of circles back to the top of our episode with the mom stuff and thanking our moms and talking about our moms. And I don't know. Hey, well,
hang on a second before you move on from there. What if your penicillin allergy was actually an allergy to something else, something in the in the medication, but not the actual mold, not the, you know, or the
very,
you know, whatever.
Very, very, very possible. And of course,
so it would be a lie you were told as a child.
Yep. Yep. I was also told I'm allergic to sodium pentothal. So it's made surgeries in my adult life very interesting. I usually just, they do it.
Isn't sodium pentothal what they use for truth serum? You mean propofol?
No, sodium pentothal. They used to use it.
The truth serum?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Well, you're allergic to it, so I can't give you an injection of it and make you tell the truth?
No, they used it to put me to sleep when I had my tonsils out in second grade, and I didn't wake up for 3 days. So they don't necessarily know if it was an allergic reaction to the pentothal or what, but the doctors have basically just ever since been like, yeah, no, none of that for him. So every surgery I've had as a grown adult, they've nerve blocked the area and basically just get me absolutely ripped and completely sedated. I'm going to sound weird. I could feel them in my knee on my last surgery, just the pressure and rooting around. But there was absolutely no pain whatsoever. It was freaky.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah, very much so. So anyway.
Well, that's what a C-section is like, because you're awake for that. I had three of them. So I'm well-versed. And spinal tap. So completely paralyzed, but awake. And you can feel them pushing and moving. That's right?
So weird.
Vacuum involved and all the things. Wow. And yeah.
That would, that would be even weirder than just a knee.
My husband was horrified. After that, he thought it was pretty cool.
Like a knee is just a knee. It's just a joint. That's like in there in the works. Like that's just crazy. That's crazy. All right. Anyway.
Yeah. They take your organs out and put them on your chest to take the baby out.
Yeah. That's what my dad said when he was telling me about my C-section. He's like, I remember seeing there watching you get born. And, yeah. He's like, I remember watching you be born and seeing your mother's liver just sitting on her chest. And
yeah.
It's pretty crazy. I'm like, yeah, I'd imagine so, dude.
Yeah, one more story, because I know you want to move on, but my husband, when Caleb, my oldest, was born, it was the first one. He was, you know, very like horrified by the procedure, but as soon as they had the baby out, his instinct, he reached to grab the baby and broke the sterile field, and you could hear everybody in there was like, no!
No! What did you do? Yeah. The baby was fine, though, right?
He was fine.
Yeah, pretty much. So anyway. To get back on course a little bit, you know, at the top of the show, we talked about our mothers. I spoke about my mother a good bit, obviously. And this video doesn't have anything necessarily to do with mothers, but this was my mom's song to me. And I don't know why I feel like ending the show with it today. Maybe there's somebody out there that needs to hear it. So I'm being kind of guided to do so because there may be people out there that need to hear the message in the song. But my mom's song to me was Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd. And she said, anytime you feel lost or you feel you can't find your way, she said this to me about a month before she died. She said, when I'm gone and you need to hear my voice, you listen to this song. And this song was her soul to mine. This was her advice to me when she's gone. So hopefully maybe somebody out there needs to hear this today and needs to remember what it is to be a simple man and the honor and integrity that lies within being a simple man that just follows God.
That's awesome. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to play this on the way out. Hit the thumb for us and be sure to head over if you want any of the links or anything that we've played. And you need to send me the link to this so I can add it to the show notes. But the show notes are on ashandamerica.substack.com. And we will see you guys next week. And remember that change happens one conversation at a time. So be brave and speak truth. Wait a second. We have Culture of Change merch. Just so everybody There's now Culture of Change merch up on the Badlands merch shop. So that's the last thing I want to say.
I'm actually glad you had that little pause because I was scrolling up over on the side and realized there was a picture I meant to show that I didn't show at the top. So I'll show it now leading in this video. I don't think on any of my shows yet I've actually shown any pictures of my mother. So I'm going to do that now to honor and kind of introduce everybody to my mom. So on the left is me and my dad and my mom. My mom was pocket sized. She was tiny. She was like 4'11", 5 feet tall. And that was actually the last time I played hockey. That was the last time that they got to watch me play hockey. And on the right there was just mom in the morning. That's what mom was, always smiling, exuding light. So that was my mom. So her name was Carol. And the Q guy in me notices the yellow shirt she was wearing there too. And I'm sure she just got a giggle out of that because she was all about Q. She didn't understand it, but man, she loved it. And she loved hearing me talk about it and show her the stuff going on. So love you and miss you, mom.
All right, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.
Love you guys. Be blessed. See you next week.
Mama told me when I was young, come sit beside me, my only son, and listen closely, oh baby, to what I say. And if you do this, it'll help you some sunny day. Ah, yeah. I'll be your simple man. Oh, take your time. Don't live too fast. Troubles will come, oh, and they will pass. Go find a woman, oh baby, then you'll find love. And don't forget, son, there is someone up above.
What do you say?
And be a simple kind of man. Oh, be something you love and understand. Oh, baby, be simple. Be a simple man. Oh, won't you do this for my son, if you can.
God bless the simple man.
Yeah. Forget your loss for rich man's gold. All that you need, oh, is in your soul. You can do this, oh baby, if you try.
Y'all come to us.
All that I want for you, my son, is be satisfied real loud. And be a simple kind of man. Oh, be something you love and understand. Be a simple man. Oh, won't you do this for my son, if you can. Oh, yes, I will. I'll be your simple man. Mm-hmm.
don't you worry. You'll find yourself. Follow your heart. Oh, nothing else. Oh, you can do this. Oh, baby, if you try.
That's right.
All that I want for you, my son, is to be satisfied. And one more thing, and be a simple kind of man. Oh, be something.
Come and see the crooks and thieves riot in the renegade streets, working for the devil's deed. The torture, the work is done. I've said I come to save the weak. The lame man walks, the blind man sees. The inner land, no one's free. I know that the day will come. Shadows rise, step out of the darkness and into the light. Morning light underneath a full moon bright, whiskey and a little moonshine, they dance with the rising sun. The wicked rule in lawless land, wash the blood off from their hands, scheming with the evil plans, but justice soon will come. Wrong is right, no one knows what's black and white, so join the fight. Calling on
to run to the trouble, folks. And what is the trouble? The trouble is the Biden administration that is seeking to turn this country into a socialist hellhole. The trouble is Antifa that wants to roam the streets and beat you into submission.
Calling on you.
And there ain't no reason to not take the challenge. Get on. Because I'm going to tell you who we come from. We don't come from some weak, jellyback, spineless. That's not who we come from. None of us.
Friends, first off, thank you so very much for joining us. We truly and deeply appreciate your continued support and love shown to us here at Badlands Media. Don't forget to hit the thumbs up on this video and help get this show on the Rumble leaderboard. Another way you can support Badlands for free? Become a Badlander. How do you do that? Head on over to badlandsmedia.tv, click connect from the top menu, and then click be a Badlander. Once you're registered, you can download clips from your favorite Badlands shows to share on your social media accounts. You can also print out flyers and stickers that you can hand out at an event and more. Let's keep growing our community because we are the news now and we take that very seriously. Thank you again from Badlands for your support and your love. It is appreciated more than you know.